You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Good evening, everyone. This is Rico Muhammad coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia. This is the Rates and Lanes podcast. So, tonight I don't have any USDA truck market report information because the website is not providing me with any data. It's not providing me a link. So if anybody else out there is having any better luck than I am with the USDA truck market report, maybe you can post a link of it up in the Rate Per Mile Masters Facebook page. But in the meantime, in between time, we do have the information from DAT Trend Lines for this week, and I see we got a couple of calls online already. So if you have any questions or anything that we can help you out with, just go ahead and press number one. That'll put you in the queue, and we'll try to get to you as soon as we possibly can. But jumping over to the DAT Trend Lines report, and van and reefer rates rise by 7 cents this week. Rates skyrocketed for the fourth week of June 29th through July 5th. Spot market rate activity declined 21% last week due to the short week that included the 4th of July. Rates soared 7 cents per mile for both van and reefers, while flatbed rates rose 10 cents as shippers rushed to close out the physical quarter on a high note. So that gives you a brief overview of everything that happened as of last week. And we're going to jump over into the DAT trend lines for the national van. We're just going to break it down by segment. For the week of June 29th, July 5th, the load availability and truckload capacity were stable for vans last week on a per diem basis. As overall load board activity declined 21% due to the short week that included Independence Day, the national load-to-truck ratio increased only 1.8 from 4.3 to 4.4 loads to truck. So there was a June ratio spike of 51%. The national average load-to-truck ratio averaged 4.3 for vans. In June, a 51% spike compared to May, and 43% above the level of June 2013. Seasonal trends and overall increase in spot market freight volume climbed to drive demand to a typical height. The background information right there, if you're keeping this data, if you're starting to subscribe to these trend lines and kind of categorize them, it kind of will help give you a lot more empirical data for your homework as far as being able to kind of gauge the market as far as the seasonality is concerned for whatever type of equipment that you may have. If you got vans, if you got flatbeds, reefers, what have you. If you're cataloging this information or have some kind of way of keeping up with this information, it's really good that you can start this. You can start to compile this data and look at it for the upcoming year's trends. You can kind of start positioning yourself and start adjusting. If you're still on the spot market this time next year, you can kind of see what the trends were doing and can kind of compare one another and put yourself in a better, have your rates closer. You can kind of adjust your rates closer ahead of time versus being a week behind and trying to catch up, is what I'm trying to say in a nutshell. We're going to get back over to the U.S. flatbed demand. And for the week of the 29th through the July 5th, flatbed load availability slipped 24% and truckload capacity declined 29% last week, partially due to reduced activity over the 4th of July holiday weekend. the load-to-truck ratio increased 7.4% from 43.5 to 46.7 loads per truck. So flatbed demand remains strong. So if you have flatbed step decks, you ought to be seeing really good rates. Once again, historical data, June ratio surges 30%. The average load-to-truck ratio rose 30% in June from 36.4 to 47.3, indicating a surge in demand and seasonal demand for the month compared to the ratio of 20.1 in June of 2013. The ratio more than doubled in a 134% increase. Moving on over to reefer demand for the U.S. market. Week of June 29th through July 5th, the load board activity paused for Independence Day, but reefer load availability and truck load capacity declined only 16% instead of the 20% decline expected in a short work week. The load-to-truck ratio remained stable at 12 loads per truck. The historical data for June ratio rises 51%. The monthly average load-to-truck ratio for June climbed 42% month over month. This is not remarkable because June is typically the peak season for reefers. This year's demand is high compared to 2013, as well with a 34% increase in the load-to-truck compared to June 2013. So now we're going to jump back into van rates. We're talking rates now. So specifically on the van side, when it comes down to the rates, we have a 6-cent spike boosted through the national average van rate to $2.15 per mile. A new record high. Rates climbed in many major freight markets, including Buffalo, Charlotte, Chicago, Dallas, and Stockton. So we're going to be jumping around across the country. I'm going to give you the national van rates across the country. And up in the Northeast, the national van rate per mile was $1.90. Southeast for van rates is $2.48 per mile. Midwest, $2.20 per mile. South Central United States was $2.22 per mile. And out west for van, the national average rate was $2.51 per mile. Jumping over into the U.S. flatbed rates, the flatbed rate surged 10 cents last week to close the quarter at a national average of $2.54 per mile. Flatbed equipment continues to be in high demand, and rates remain strong. So once again, we're going to start our journey across the country in the Northeast. The national average for flatbeds in the Northeast was $3.61 per mile. In the Southeast, $2.74 per mile. In the Midwest, $3.23 per mile. South Central United States was $2.97 per mile. And out west, the national flatbed rate was $2.09 per mile on average out west. Now jumping on over into the U.S. reefer rates for June 29th through July 5th. Reefer rates rose 7 cents last week to $2.49 per mile as growers and grocers paid a premium to deliver fruit and vegetables to retail outlets before the July 4th holiday. So, starting up in the Northeast, the average reefer rate was $2.26 per mile. Southeast, the average was $2.37 per mile. Midwest was $3.08 per mile, which is leading all segments of the country. And down in the South Central was $2.13 per mile. And out west was $2.57 per mile. So I see that our co-host is online with us. Chad, are you there?
Hey there, brother. I'm here.
All right. Well, Chad, I gave a rundown on the DAT trend lines. Was there anything you want to add on to that?
I didn't get a chance to look at everything. I got the email from DAT. I like those. I like the numbers now that DAT put out as far as the increase. It went up 12%, but I think a lot of that has to do with or what was it, 8 cents, Rico? Reefer and van went up by 8 cents. But that had a lot to do with being at the end of the quarter, end of the fiscal year. People were trying to turn a good number for the semi end of the that quarter.
Exactly.
I'll run down here and tell you. I'll tell you what my picks of the highest demand states right now with the largest volume with a good percent of loads coming out versus loads coming in. And on top of that list, now for the quarter, Alabama, Arkansas, California, Georgia, Louisiana, Missouri, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas. And that tops my list of states that are just doing a whole lot better than all the rest of them.
Right, right. Well, it seems that depending upon where you are, it still seems like I'm looking at the national map of load-to-truck ratios across the United States. And it seems that all segments are still pretty viable across the board. Of course, with flatbeds leading the way, the market for flatbeds seems to be still extremely strong no matter where you are in the country. It seems to be really, really strong. So I'm hoping that a lot of the flatbedders are taking advantage of their position in the marketplace right now and getting starting to see better rates. Is there anything you wanted to go into as far as something you wanted to get off on before we get into any calls or anything tonight?
So I found it now. What I was trying to say, it was a 7 cents. What I was reading on here from you probably went over it before I was able to get on here. I'm here in North Carolina. I'm just now getting offloaded. I took a great load out of Georgia yesterday. It was out of Atlanta. Got to hang out with Olivia. For those that know Olivia, she's the admin of Rate for Mile Masters, and got to hang out with her yesterday. And we got to try to book her on a load and book myself on a load at the same time because we were both there in Atlanta. Had her and her husband in my truck, sort of like what I did with whenever you were with me and you and Ted were with me at the CMC when I was booking the load out of Kansas City. But I was working on two trucks at that time, so it was a little hectic. But the first load that we came across was a little bit of a short run.
Now, Ted, I got to stop you. My feelings are hurt right now.
What?
You was in my backyard. You was in my backyard, and you didn't even call me. I see how you are.
I didn't know you was at home. I talked to you a while ago, and you said you were at home. Were you at home yesterday?
I've been home since last week.
Oh man, we could have really took on got some really great rates out there. If I knew that, I was on the north east side of Atlanta, and. I don't know where about you are in Atlanta, but it seems like anywhere you go in Atlanta, it takes like 30 minutes to get there. It'd be 10 miles on the road, take 30 minutes to get there.
Yeah, that's about the size of it.
But I had them, that would have been awesome if we all got to go out to eat. Olivia and her husband took me out to eat and brought me back. We got started a little late. They had a lot of talking to do with me and with each other. It was fun getting to talk to each other and talk about races and stuff. Anyway, so we're in the truck and we're looking for loads, and we're looking for a team load and a solo load at the same time. And the call's coming in, negotiating the loads, and Olivia, I had her be the scribe for the event, and she was taking all the notes, and I would try to say out loud what I wanted her to take notes on. And because I tried to do it in a slower pace instead of just quoting low, and since we're booking their truck as well, I wanted to question both of them because they're out there as a team, and I wanted to get Olivia's high number along with her husband's high number, and what's their high number. I always like to work on two different numbers. What's the high number? And then when we get to the negotiation part of it, what's the lowest number we're going to go to? Well, the husband, he was pretty high up there, and which is no problem with that. But and Olivia was a little bit lower than that, but both of them communicating, we were able to come up with both those numbers, and so that was really fun doing that. And we got a load, a really good load for them, 3385, I think is what it came to go from Atlanta. They had a little bit of a deadhead and went to Michigan with two or three stops up there. We got them that, but that load actually fell through. We got it booked with J.B. Hunt, and I guess they realized they paid us too much, and before they sent the rate sheet, they canceled the load. But they were already
loaded when that happened.
Time for me to say again.
So you got to load it when that happens.
Oh, and it kills me, and especially see, I was running that. I was sort of booked that load under my MC number, but not book it. I negotiated it based on. They called me based on, because it was my truck being posted, and I did all the negotiation part of it. And so to see them up, and they could have done that to me. And so I took offense to it. And as soon as Olivia told me that, I called them up, and I'm like, and so I got into the discussion with the agent. Well, the agents, that they knew right away that they didn't want it, that they didn't. They wanted to pass me on to someone higher up than themselves because they weren't able to answer none of my questions that I was coming at them. And I was coming at them pretty fast with some questions. I wanted answers. How are you going to book us a load and then turn around and tell us that they said, well, our customer's only giving us $1,400 and we can't just give you $3,300. Well, then why did you agree to it? You agreed to it. You told the team that they need to be there at this time, at this location, at this time. They're rushing home to grab their truck. They head off and do it. And I handed the phone over to Olivia so she could finish the deal with them. And they did all this. And so anyway, they got me transferred to the guy higher up. And he's like, well, they shouldn't. The agents working under him should not have done that. He was like the director of that department. And I had a pretty good heated discussion with him. But my words to him was like, okay, so for now on, I mean, if this is the way it is, for now on, I'm not talking to the people that's employed by you. I'm going to start talking to you I'm going to ask for you specifically. I don't care about your people that work for you because we can't do nothing with them, you know. They can pass the word here and there, but I really can't do no negotiation whenever they're playing the role of doing the negotiation. I really can't even do that with them because they have no power to do that unless they're just passing word on to you. And then, anyway, yeah, it was a bad deal. But I was the first load we grabbed was the load I took, and it's good that I took it because I wouldn't want a team on this load. This load that I took has turned out not to be so great. It came out of the bottom part of Atlanta, I can't remember the name of the city, but altogether it was like 464 miles, I believe, deadhead and loaded, paying $1,800. And so it was a little less on the miles, and it was sort of toward the end of the day, and I offered it to Olivia and her husband, and they went ahead and gave it to me to do it. So it came out to right about $4 a mile. The bad thing about it is that here you see what time it is now that I'm getting off, that I just now got offloaded, and the phone, I'm not getting very much a volume of phone calls coming in. So this could be a day that I have to spend the night here and try to look for something early in the morning. Not no big deal. I got a really good rate coming up here at $4 a mile, so I could suck it up if that's what happens. But post myself, and I'll keep looking, and if someone posts a load in the middle of the night, you know, hopefully I can be the first one to call in on it and offer my rate and my service to be able to move that load. That's been my last 2 days.
Man. See, I'm missing all the excitement. I've been home having a deal. Was doing a little preventive maintenance today. Replace all the belts and stuff on my truck, and come lo and behold, the tensioner on my belt screw broke off on there, and having to wait till tomorrow and get that part ordered in until we get the truck put back together and be ready to roll. But rather be doing this stuff at home than out there somewhere on the road.
Absolutely, I'm with you on that. Another thing that I wanted to bring up was the lady Melissa that called in on the last podcast. I've been working with her maybe three times. We've been talking and just some small minor coaching. I've been really busy, so I haven't been able to do a whole lot with her, and she's been busy as well. And she does step deck, so a lot of times when I'm talking to her, she's in the middle of strapping a load down or getting offloaded or in the middle of running through Dallas traffic or something like that. Anyway, but what time I've been talking to her and giving her some pointers, some a little bit of advice and seeing what she's doing. I wish I had a whole lot more time. I'm going to where when she goes to get the load, I'm you know, right there along with her the whole all the way through. But got some positive feedback from her today. Somewhere in Oklahoma, going from Oklahoma to Maine on a step deck, paying over $6,000. I can't remember the exact number, but it was over $6,000. But she was thrilled about it. I was too. I mean, she booked it herself, and she was happy that she was able. She negotiated it and got what she wanted out of it. It's a light load of air conditioning stuff, so we're making some progress there with that caller.
All right, cool. Well, speaking of updates from last week, we got Ben called in last week on a load from Florida. I think this was the gentleman that was leased on to someone that was trying to get a load. So let's go over to Ben. Hey, Ben, this is Rico and Chad. How can we help?
Hi, guys. How's it going today?
All right, yourself?
How's Benny?
Good. I just wanted to call and give you an update. What ended up happening here with this load was I left Minneapolis, Minnesota, and went down to Orlando. And what it was is I had 5,000 pounds of structural steel to drop down there for the customer and then take the other 30,000 pounds and bring it up to Kingsport, Tennessee. So I wouldn't have been able to get anything else on the trailer like I thought I was going to. So it all worked out. And then I got up here and I just deadheaded 24 miles over to Bristol, picked up a load, and I'm on my way over to Missouri with a decent paying load. So
it sounds like you had a good week last week and this week.
Yeah, it's not turning out to be too bad. So I just thought I'd call and give a little bit of an update. I know there's one caller after me there that he had some valid points, and I took those into consideration, and you know.
Yeah, and that's one thing that, you know, glad that you kept listening last week, because that was one thing when he was talking about. I think it was Joe that called in, and he was talking, was telling us about, you know. You know, you may, trying to get more revenue on the truck, you may actually end up screwing up the customer because they're paying for you to do the deadhead, and you need to be there at a certain time. And if you got another load on the truck and you run into a hiccup or something and you can't get that load off, then there may be a problem. So, you know, that's the great thing about having group thought and having group, you know, saying somebody else may see something where some of us, we may drop the ball, but somebody else is seeing and looking and willing to contribute, and we benefit from the entire group can benefit from just a few people willing to step out there and put examples out there. So yeah, that was a great point that Joe brought up last week. So yeah, Ben, we appreciate the call in and the update on that load right there. Anything else you got? You want to add any questions you got? Anything we can help you out with this week?
No, not right at this time, but I do enjoy listening to you guys, and I am learning a lot from you, and I hope that this great group continues making strides forward, you know, to make this industry a better place for everybody to want to come and work.
Hey, well, we appreciate it, Ben. We're definitely going to try to do our part in trying to make the industry a better place. And for everybody that's on hold right now, if you have any questions and you want to know anything about a rate or a lane or anything specifically like that or anything else that myself or Chad might be able to help you out with, just go ahead and press that number one key. That'll put you in the queue to let us know that you're ready to come on board and chat with us. We definitely encourage user interaction. We want to have give and take back and forth with the callers so that we can – if you have any questions, anything that we can address that might be able to help you out on your way, maybe we might be able to point some things out and help you along and get you up to getting some better rates. So, Chad, this week you said you were in Georgia. You didn't have any problems getting out of Georgia, I would assume. Now, earlier you gave us a rundown of what you call your top 10 states. I forgot to ask you when you was giving us the rundown. Now, you told us what is your number one? Did you give them in order, or did you go from 10, 9, 8, 7?
I just ran it down in alphabetical order. Number one, yesterday was definitely Georgia, and I put South Carolina as being number two.
As far as fans.
Yeah, for Van. Yeah, I guess I should have these numbers for all the other. And then sometimes I do that and I post it. But this is a chart that I make for myself every day. Just look at the number of van loads coming into a state and the number of posted loads that brokers have posted loads going into the state and the number of posted loads coming out of the state. And by doing that, I create my chart and I use Excel and then I divide the one number by the other to get the percent, and anything over 100%, it means that there's a little bit more, anything over 100%, there's more, the way I got it set up, there's more freight coming out of the state than coming in. And that's less competition and rates are more going to be more in my favor.
Right, and definitely, man, Georgia is, for all three segments, is just knocking the cover off of the ball. And particularly Atlanta, I'm on the board here, and I'm showing 5,063 loads in the Atlanta market, and I'm showing only 767 trucks available for drive-ins.
Yeah. And the thing that I look at, along with your number, my number was pretty close to that. When I ran it, the number when I ran it was 4,153, but that was at that moment when we ran it. Number of posted loads coming out of Georgia and 1,934 loads posted throughout America that's coming to Georgia that brokers have posted, you know, right at that very moment. Which is a 214% positive. But the thing is that 4,000 mark is also a large volume. I would say, and that's for the whole
exactly.
state of Georgia, that is, there's only one state on here that's beating Georgia. We'll take a guess, Rico, what state would be beating Georgia and the volume of posted loads coming out of that state? What state would you think it is?
Right now, I would probably say South Carolina.
No, they do have South Carolina has a slightly better percent, but the volume coming out of Georgia makes it a better state, in my opinion, because it's got so much of a larger volume. On my chart, the volume coming out of South Carolina is 1,878 versus 780 loads coming into the state, which gives it a percentage of 240. But the volume's a little lower compared to Georgia. State that has the largest volume would be Texas. But look how big Texas is versus
yeah,
Georgia.
That's what
you
I'm
know,
thinking.
Georgia's really
that's what I'm looking at now. I'm looking at state. I switched my program over to states, and yes, Texas is booming. 14,000 loads coming out of Texas.
Yeah, but look how big the whole entire state is compared to the size of Georgia is, and we got that much freight coming out of that one, you know, small state compared to what Texas is.
Right, because I'm showing when I just compare the entire state of Georgia, there's a total of 9,869 loads coming out of Georgia right now. And Georgia is nowhere near. I mean, you probably could fit three Georgias inside of Texas.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And it means that we're talking about a whole entire state. And when I run these numbers and I look at this, another thing that I pay attention to is just because it's got a large volume, you know, all these the things that I look at for as far as volume and percent are strong indicators that I'm going to do good coming out of that state. But for instance, the state of Arkansas, that's phenomenally always got good numbers. But I've been there and it all depends on where you're at in Arkansas, whether you get those great numbers or not. Like you can be in, if you can deadhead to Little Rock without a whole lot of deadhead, then you can do pretty good. Little Rock or Memphis, If you're in those areas, then you do pretty good. But when you start getting to the western part of the state, it seems like it's harder to, for me, harder to find that spot freight loads that brokers are trying to move.
Yeah, and you get to being, you know, different areas of Arkansas. I mean, it's just like, you know, how people talk about Florida, and it's a great example, you know, where you're in a state that's either a consuming state or a producing state. And in certain areas inside of states, you run into that same little conundrum where you have areas of tremendous production, and then you have areas that are just particularly a consumer, that there's really not nothing coming out of there. They're not producing anything in those particular
right.
areas in the state. Looks like we have a caller on the line. Bruce is in South Carolina. Let's go to Bruce and see what he has for us tonight.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Bruce, we're well and yourself. We can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, my question is, I'm in the process of branching out, getting my own authority, which I got all that good stuff set up, and I've been running, while I was leased to my other company, I was running their plates, and I've got a paperwork process to go to Blythewood to get my base plates and if the sticker, but I was wondering, since I've been already had my truck previously and with some other company's tag on it, because I bought the truck last year in September, when I go to South Carolina, do y'all know if they're going to hit me with sales tax and property tax before I get my base plates? I know, Rico, you're from South Carolina, correct?
Yes, actually, I got my authority set up in South Carolina initially. I'm in Georgia now. But, no, you should have already paid your sales tax and everything from when you've done all that. But you just want to make sure that when you head down to Blythewood that you do have a current 2290, that you do have your current heavy highway usage and all that, your UCR. You're going to want to have all that stuff taken care of before you get down there, because if not, they will prolong the process down there in South Carolina. Young lady at the desk, if you go down there, named Wilma, she helped us out tremendously when we went down there a couple of times. When I was doing some, I had some other owner operators that were leased on. But yeah, as long as you got your paperwork and everything, and you should have like a little checklist that South Carolina has a little. I think you can go to their web portal, and they should have like a little checklist of everything that you need to have before you get down there. And as long as you got those things, you should be in and out fairly quickly. Well, all things considered. What type of equipment are you going to be running?
I'm running a 52 Step Low Pro.
Step Low Pro. So okay, so you looking for any direct customers yet?
Well, I'm working that out. I'm currently leased to Landstar, and so I'm in my area. There's a few manufacturers, and I got some things I'm working on, and. So that's coming out pretty good. I'm looking to maybe do some work with Landstar and Mercer and a couple brokers that I've dealt with while I was leased to Landstar. I made some good contacts with them, so I've got myself signed up with them, and so I'm in the process now of getting my base plates, and this is just the last, because it's been a long, my lien holder had to. It was a Minnesota title. They had to send it to Carolina to get it registered, and they had to do that, but they misplaced it, and it was a long journey. So they finally got all that taken care of, so South Carolina got all that ready for me to get a base place now. And my company that was doing the paperwork, I was just wondering, am I going to have to pay sales tax through South Carolina and property tax before I go back and get my tag?
Okay. So, yeah, I may have misspoke. You probably will have to pay those because you're going to be registering in South Carolina now, so you probably will get hit with some of those taxes. They're a little peculiar that way in South Carolina. But, yeah, you're probably going to get hit with the sales tax and the property tax as well. But it shouldn't be anything crazy. It's not nothing that's going to break the bank.
Okay.
And like I said, the ladies down there at the motor carrier division down there in Blythewood, as long as you go in there with the right attitude, let me preface it by that. You know, you go in there with the right attitude, and you're kind of personable. You know, maybe go in there with a little sense of humor and make them laugh or whatever. And they were more than willing to help us out when we went down. Like I said, it's funny, I still can remember the young lady's name. It's still in my head. Her name was Wilma. But she helped us out, because I was down there maybe four times back a couple of years back. We had a bunch of, I had a few people that I was leasing on under my authority back a couple of years back. And so I was down there on a regular basis.
Okay. Well, like I said, this is a new adventure, and I'm excited about it. I got some great things working. And like I said, I'm going to start working on me some direct shippers and try to make this thing happen. I'm going to make it happen. And I'm very excited
about
it.
Congratulations. Do you know what part of the country you're going to be focusing on in particular? Maybe we can help you out, maybe run some rates for you real quick, or if you got any questions on any lanes that you might want to target.
Well, just last year, I did bought a trade mother truck, and it got me a California compliance. But I'm going to be focusing on, I would say, from the mid-half of the northeast, northeast, mid-half, well, let's say from Virginia down to the Texas, I guess from, let's say, North Carolina line down to about Texas, Midwest, Missouri, Ohio, North Carolina, Missouri, Ohio, Kentucky, Indy, and while I was currently leased at Landstar, I did go into the provinces of Ontario, Saskatchewan, Alberta. So I'll be looking at some of the Canada as well, because I'm getting myself set up for across the border as well. What's your thoughts?
We have another group. Once you get everything active, you might want to come over and ask to join the motor carrier meetup. On Facebook page, the motor carrier meetup, that's more specifically towards motor carriers versus guys that are leased on. So, and once you get your authority, of course, you're considered then a motor carrier. But as far as suggestions, I like, if you just got one truck, or you're running one or two trucks?
One truck right now.
One truck. Okay. My suggestion is to try to focus on maybe a couple of primary areas. That way you can be going back and forth and start to develop relationships with people in those lanes in those particular cities. Now, what you may give up, you know, just think, all things considered, this is what I like to do. And Chad can give you the opposite of what I do. I focus on just primarily southeast, and I got a couple of cities that I'm really trying to target and lock down on. But what I give up by doing that, I give up some of my negotiating leverage, because I'm not willing to go any and everywhere. But by me giving that up, I'm still able to make a nice living doing what it is that I like to do and servicing the areas that I like to service. So I don't go above, basically, I really don't go above the Mason-Dixon line. Nothing against going above the Mason-Dixon. But I'm primarily a southeast, a southeastern carrier. I primarily focus on all my service from Georgia, no further north than Virginia, and no further west than Texas, Oklahoma. So I kind of stay in that little box right there. And it gives me opportunity, like I said, to begin to build relationships and target in certain cities the stuff that I want to go after. And what city do you stay in South Carolina?
Aiken, outside of Augusta, Georgia.
Okay. So right there in Aiken. Like I was telling the young lady last week, Husqvarna, you know, they have it's either Husqvarna or Kubota. I forget which one, because both of them got the orange tractors. But, you know, they got a distribution spot up there outside of Columbia.
Okay, I know Husqvarna. I know Husqvarna for that Orangeburg.
Right. Right.
So that's
something that you might want to focus. You might want to focus on that. And I know that there's a place outside of Columbia. When I was trying to build up my brokerage, I was getting a lot of emails from a place outside of Columbia that does the steel and aluminum coils. I don't know if you're familiar with that place, but I know it's a place right outside of Columbia. I used to have them on my email list. I used to get emails from them daily that has some stuff going on down there. So if you can increase your availability as far as going the direct route, then that will give you an opportunity to get better rates as well. But in order to have that availability and stuff, people are going to want to know, you know, how much of a regular basis. That's why I focus on the areas that I focus on, because they'll generally, I don't necessarily have to post my truck, and I always get phone calls because they know generally I got a truck in that particular area in the southeast, so they're always calling me and saying, hey, is your truck available here, or is your truck available here today? And that's something that you can build up once your customers learn and know that you pretty much always have a truck available in that area. Chad,
when you say post your truck, because I just recently joined the link that Chad gave me, the link that he gave us that low board.
Right.
I just recently joined that because my card is active now. Like I said, the tag thing is just the last part of it. I just recently, I think last week or first part of this week, I think it was last week, got with that, and they got set up on the computer and all that good stuff.
Okay. Well, congratulations again on getting your authority. Chad, you got anything you want to throw in?
Now that you got that active, start studying it. This is a good, until you get rolling, this is a good time to start looking at all the information, soak it in. This is a good time to read everything you can read on there, the different screens, different ways to use that Trucker's Edge load board. Get yourself very familiar with it what day do you think you'll be posting your truck for the first time?
Well, my wife and I, I'm looking at probably the first of August, because my wife and I, we're getting ready to go on vacation. Like, I've been home forever and a day. We get ready to go on vacation. I'm going to be gone for about 2 or 3 weeks. I've been home since the 18th, you know.
Yeah. Ain't nothing wrong with that, Bruce. It just goes to show that if you can afford to be home like that, hey, you must be doing something right.
Well,
yeah, absolutely.
I'm coming from Landstar, so I made some good moves, made some money, and I'm just ready to take my business to the next level, to the next plateau. And we're going on vacation out to Vegas, so we're gonna be out there for a week. But I'm gonna take a load out that way, take a load back, and then the South Carolina thing will be cleared up by then, so I won't be looking to post my truck around by the 1st of August.
Okay,
well,
and make sure, one other thing just to throw out there, you said you get your authority and everything active. Jump on, make sure you get signed up with NASTIC so that you can get those good fuel discounts and stuff like that, so that you're not paying through the nose for your fuel.
Right, I already got that in the working too. Matter of fact, I talked to the gentleman yesterday. He said I'm in the last stages of it, so I should be receiving my fuel card and all that stuff back within a matter of days now.
Cool beans, man. You on top of it.
Well, yeah, getting set up the right way.
I took these last 3 weeks off, because, you know, it's an ironic faxing. When people send you paperwork, they send you 15, 20 pages, and my fax machine went down on me, so I got to buy me another fax machine, and everybody wants $2 a page. And, you know, I'm taking this opportunity out now to get with the people I need to get with, so it's much easier telling this paperwork here at the house versus being on the road. And
I'll tell you another little trick on that faxing stuff too. Don't necessarily have to go get you another fax machine. As long as you got a regular printer, go get you an account set up for eFax. Go on eFax.
Okay.
Just go on Google eFax, and there's all kind of eFax companies out there available. And
okay.
While you're in the truck, my truck is basically a virtual office. I have everything that I need, even though my wife does the majority of my stuff, but on occasion she's not available and I have to do stuff on my own. I have everything that I need to do inside of my truck to take care of rate confirmations, faxing, and all that stuff. Go to Walmart, go buy your you can probably pick you up a nice cheap little printer that you can plug into your truck for maybe $40, and with the scanner of capabilities on it. So when you get a fax, the fax will come directly to your email. You can print it off in your truck. You can sign it, or if you get a little bit more computer savvy, you can do an e-signature right on your computer, and you don't even have to print it off, and just save that document and turn around and fax your setup packages and all that stuff back into the broker right there from the cab of your computer, as long as you got an internet connection.
Now,
so
that's kind of high tech for me. So I'm gonna have to kind of learn about that. Maybe get you to explain it to me a little bit more, because that's getting a little fancy for me.
Well, it's not. Don't let me scare you off on it. You may want to try. Like I said, go into, if you're a little bit computer literate or whatever, just go on Google and Google eFax. And they have, like, videos and tutorials that can help step you through it step by step. But don't let that intimidate you. It's really not that high tech. It's just it'll help bring you untie the cord from being tied down to a regular fax machine the traditional fax machine. It just helps you be more up to date as far as you're not having to sit there and wait by that particular traditional fax machine. It'll come directly to your email. So if you got a smartphone or anything like that, you can still see all of your faxes as they come in real time through your email.
Okay. You know what? I think I had that thing years ago called Rapid Fax, and they gave me, and my faxes came in through email. So I might look that back up. I appreciate that. That was many years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit better than, you know, it helps eliminate the cost of sitting there having to have another phone line just dedicated solely towards the purposes of faxes.
Right, because the truck stops, they burn you up $2 a page to receive and send, and I'm like, man, that's kind of rough. And when you got 18 pages to send back, that's kind of hefty. But I'm very much interested in this thing. I'm looking forward to it, and I feel good about it. And like I said, I've been doing my due diligence while I've been home, making my contacts and doing all the reading I can, and like I say, touching bases. Well, one of my things I've been doing while I was with Landstar, I've been putting myself a broker list together of some of the customers I service while I booked the load through as a PCO, and just been, like I say, making myself a list and some of the customers that we service, and found out who the broker was, and just been making some phone calls, and so that's been working out pretty good for me. And
keep those contacts and make those contacts back with those agents or whatever, and develop that relationship with those agents. And once they, you know how it was, the system works at Landstar. Once you develop that core relationship with that particular agent or whatever. Like some of my friends at Landstar told me, some of those loads, somebody got to die before you ever even see it go on the load board, because they won't even make it to the load board.
Right. But that was my question about the I'm not going to tie up because I get somebody else's chance coming, but I was just wondering about South Carolina before I go up that way Friday. Would I be? I know basically what my tax is going to cost me, but I was wondering if they're going to throw a surprise on me for sales tax, property tax, and all that good stuff, because Carolina wants that money.
Take your time. Like I said, they're more than willing to help you out down there.
Okay.
Really good people down there. I had a good experience. Unlike other times, like I said, everything is about how you approach the situation as well. And sometimes people, when they go to the DMV, they automatically have it set up in their mind that they've, got an attitude or whatever. And just go in there and put a smile on somebody's face, and you'll be surprised how far that'll get you.
Okay, and this other group you said is called, tell me the other group again, name I need to join?
Motor Carrier Meetup.
Motor Carrier Meetup. So I can just go, that's on Facebook, just put that search in there, and it will pop up also as well?
Yes, sir, it certainly will. Like I say, over in that group, we talk a little bit more in-depth things about more things, more than just rakes and lanes over there.
Okay, then. Well, I look forward to joining that and see about becoming a member.
All right. Well, we appreciate it, Bruce. Congratulations again.
Thank you, sir.
He's still on, Chad. Go ahead.
I wonder, you joined through the Trucker's Edge. You used the promo code, and you said you're going to be posting your truck around the 1st of August.
Yes.
My name's Chad Boblett. Send me a private message with your phone number, and we'll schedule, and I'll help you out with your first load if you want to, when you get ready to get started, if you want that help.
Okay, because I know that load board is a little bit different from the Landstar board. So, but yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'll walk you through it. I'll stay on there with you all the way through picking that first load. If that's the way you go, you're also going to be looking for direct shippers. You might have one of those by then, that's going to bring you out of wherever you are now. But you're going to be looking for that backhaul load. The load board will be good for that on helping you find that backhaul load. And so whatever, shoot me a message, and I'll definitely help you out on that.
Okay, because the way I normally run, once I leave the house, I normally run 3 weeks to take a week off.
How many weeks you stay up?
I said it's general stay up about 3 weeks straight and take a week off.
I used to do that. I used to do that all the time. Now it's like more like 2 weeks to a week. But rates have gotten better. Do you care if I ask how did you do at Landstar? You're just now leaving them, and was it good over there?
Yeah, I have no quarrels with Landstar. It's just. I just look at that, just kind of leaving a little money on the table, and I won't say I'm greedy, but I look at the fact that for the work that they're doing, I figure I could do that for myself, and I have something to take away. Landstar, they got strong freight, but I'm just in the frame of mind, I want to take my business to the next level, and I have some good rates, and like I said, with them, I ran 3 weeks and took a week off.
I was gonna say that shows that but being able to set yourself up like that, taking through all probably a good majority of 2013, that's the way I ran, and so that's a good way. That's a whole lot better than what it was as a company driver. When I was a company driver, it'd be like you're out for the whole week, 70 hours, and they'd get you home just in time to do a 34-hour restart. And every year they'd give you 1 week off, for vacation. So that's a lot better way to do that than being an owner-operator. There's definitely huge rewards. But that goes to show that you did really do good over at Landstar with what you were doing. Are you going to continue with the drive, or is your operation going to be drive-in?
No, I'm running a step deck, and I'm looking
step deck,
at
okay.
I'm running a step deck low pro, and I'm looking to try to put a deal together. I got my eye on a double drop RG, and also as well. I'm not gonna get into the big heavy haul. I'm not getting into the big heavy haul. But I like dealing with chains and binders and more equipment. So I gotta be in a general trying to put a deal together. So I'm looking to have best of both worlds with my step deck, even with the double drop RG, and also as well.
Are you familiar? Can you do oversized loads? As long as it ain't too heavy.
Yeah, I can do. Right now, I do oversized. Matter of fact, I got an oversized I'm picking up tomorrow and heading down to San Diego. I try to stay up on the 12 wide, and I try to stay 13, 6. Maybe I might push over to 14. So I try to stay up on the 12, and I try to stay up under. But once I get the RGN, I'm not interested in going over 60,000 to 70,000 pounds, something like 80,000. Around 60,000 to 70,000 pounds. I don't want to get in that big heavy stuff.
I'm working with a lady that does step deck now, and for someone that does oversize, that's gotta be. It'd be very interesting to negotiate an oversized load because it's such a niche. I mean, there ain't a whole lot of you guys out there that'll take on that challenge, but then there ain't a whole lot of the oversized loads going on. But means that. You're like the only one, and this company needs this oversized load taken, and you have the ability to be able to do that. The negotiation part of that's got to be extreme. I mean, the thousands and thousands of dollars you can rack onto that, if the company, Is the company going to sweat this? You know, you're probably hauling equipment that, I would say equipment that costs in the ranges of $400,000 or $500,000. You know, is $10,000 or $20,000 going to be a big deal to get it moved safely? Or, you know, one of those windmill props or, you know, things like that. Those things got to cost a lot of money. And I don't think nobody's going to really sweat with it. You know, maybe it's $1 million. I had a friend that did an Apache helicopter. I think he said it was like a $10 million helicopter. He didn't negotiate it. But something like that, is someone really going to sweat, you know, $5,000, $10,000? I don't know. But it would be fun to be a part of that. And if you call me, I'm going to try to entertain that when we do that.
Okay. I look forward to doing that, sir.
Okay, cool.
All right. I appreciate it. I'll sit back on the radio.
All right, Bruce. We appreciate it again. Buddy. Congratulations again. And that's exciting. Got Jim. Jim wants to know about how to get started with his own authority and insurance. Jim, are you there?
Yes, sir, Rico, I'm here.
All right, you're on with me and Chad. How can we help you out tonight?
Well, I called NASDIQ today. I've never called them before, and you know, because I don't know anything about getting the authority. You know, I'm not good with I'm good with running our truck very efficiently, but I'm not a good paperwork document kind of person. So I figure I'm not the. I've heard some people say, well, maybe you should just do it yourself with online guidance, but NASDIQ only wants $650 to help me do the whole thing. So I was just going to ask both of your opinion on. Is that who both of you used, or did you use Elida, or did you do it yourself? And then also, when I was on the phone with them, we haul drive. I'm with Roadrunner right now hauling dry van, and we haul hazardous materials. Matter of fact, I took one of their truckload divisions. Right now I'm getting 208 from Houston up to Fredericksburg, PA. I'm driving right now, which is much stronger than our normal rate of about $1.55 or $1.60 with fuel. So I'm seeing that the market is there, just running some of their truckload stuff. But I was wondering, in terms of insurance, what should I get high enough insurance to get some of these hazardous materials loads, you know, or is that not worth it? So those are my two questions for now. Is in terms of actually getting the authority, should I just let NASDIQ do it for the $650? And what kind of insurance? I know I've heard not to get A-rated. I've heard not to get Elitis because it's not A-rated, and some companies won't give you a load with that with Elita insurance. So I'm not even going to go down that road. So, but NASDIQ said theirs is A-rated.
And that's it. Yeah, NASDIQ is more of an insurance broker. They're going to shop you to a variety of different insurance companies, and they're going to come back with. Whoever comes back with the best rates as far as the insurance is concerned. Up the authority, I went through a gentleman that was on Kevin Rutherford's show a couple of years back. His name was Rex Evilsizer. I don't know if you can Google him on Rex Evilsizer, but our good friend Kenny Long is a proponent of doing it yourself, knowing how to do it yourself. I didn't do mine myself. I just didn't really want to sit down there's a time value equated to money. And even though, this, like Kenny said, it didn't take that long and it really wasn't that difficult, I thought that I could use my time wisely in another arena, another area, as far as like maybe looking for customers or whatever versus trying to sit down and do get the authority portion straightened out. I've heard good things about NASDIQ as far as them setting you up with the authority and getting you everything that you need to do. The insurance over at NASDIQ I know is really good. The companies that they shop you with, all those are good top rated companies. So definitely you're starting out on the right foot by getting the association with NASDIQ. Chad, what do you think? How did you get started? I think both of us had somebody else set up our authorities though.
I used someone else as well, and there's really no reason to give their name because I was uneducated at the time and paid way too much to get it done. If you can get it, I would more recommend NASDIQ just because it's more of a trustworthy company than the people that I used. But my friend Tom, he's on the Rape from My Master's Facebook group page. Tom, who's like one of the first people that joined the group when I first started, he got his authority through NASDIQ, and he was actually their very first customer. They learned off of him on how to get on how to get someone their authority. Now the insurance thing this year was I shopped my insurance through the people that I normally use, and then I also use NASDIQ as a broker to shop my insurance as well, and they were able to save $500 to $600 for the whole entire year if I went through NASDIQ and the broker they had, but they weren't going to be able to beat the deductible that the insurance, the company that I have a long-term history, the past 3 years with, I've almost got like a $250 deductible with where I haven't had any claims with them. So NASDIQ is another great place for the insurance to shop that. And he said something else about hazardous material.
Right. I was getting ready to get into that. You go ahead. You go ahead.
All right. Well, I was just going to say hazardous material. There's some of the negatives. The reason why I still today haven't entertained having that on my insurance where I can haul hazardous material. The main reason is when I got my first audit by the FMCSA when they came in and it came to my home and my office and inspected how I was running my business. One of the things that said that he brought up, it was an educational audit. Usually your first audit is an educational audit, and they're not out to really hit you hard unless you're really messing up bad. And we spent a lot of time together and sort of made friends with the guy and spent the whole day together, actually. And it usually doesn't take that long, but I had so many questions for him, and I talked to him so much that he didn't care to stay there and hang out with me. But one of the things he brought up was about hazardous material. He said, he's like, you're not messing with it. You're not doing it, are you? And I said, we're getting a lot of background noise from your phone, partner. Maybe your headset's a little too close. But anyway, all right. Go ahead. Well, the DOC officer said that I shouldn't even bother with it because of the ramifications of how much more I would be inspected and how much more they would eyeball everything else and be inspecting me more. I don't know how true that is. That was what he told me three and a half years ago, and so I never did bother with it because of that, and I've never seen nothing since then that's encouraged me to look at it more, like load-wise. I haven't seen loads that, oh, it's a hazardous load, and that load was paying so good, I really wanted to do it. Rico, I don't even know if you have a reefer. You probably don't do hazardous control yourself, right, Rico?
I don't, but I've heard different things about, it's just one of those things where you really need to sit down and do a cost analysis on it to see if it's worthwhile to even do hazardous. If you got customers that are willing to pay you a premium to haul hazardous material, then it may be something that you want to look into because it's definitely a niche, an extra thing that you can add to your repertoire that is a niche. And our good friend Kenny Long was sitting back and waiting, and he heard us talking about the authority thing, and he called in. So Kenny Long to the rescue. Talk to us about setting up the authority, Kenny.
Hey, Rico, Chad.
Hey there.
I heard you bring me up about setting your own authority up on your own, and I still recommend that. But this gentleman says he's not great with paperwork. So going through a third party isn't a terrible idea with paperwork. The NASDAQ is probably one of the better organizations I found to do that. They can handle everything from insurance to get the whole ball in one shot. So that's probably the way to go. I would recommend them if you really don't want to tackle it on your own. It's not a complicated process. There's just a lot of different organizations that you have to deal with to get it done. And NASDAQ will just kind of bring all the forms into one spot and get it all taken care of for you in one shot for you. So that's the way to go. But on that, and also you said hazmat, for your first 2 years with your own authority, you're already under a lot of scrutiny as a new entrant, and a lot of insurance companies are going to frown upon that to begin with, and if you talk to your insurance company about hazmat right off the bat, that's going to spike your premiums through the roof. I looked at it, and it's unless you have an almost dedicated customer hauling hazmat, it's usually not worth it. Of course, every situation varies. You can do your own research on it, but typically it's not profitable by the time you work in your insurance. And the occasional run that you might come across on the load board. They do pay a premium when they come across, but it's typically not worth the extra cost involved. Plus, it's a whole new level of paperwork. There's a lot more record keeping involved with hazmat. Being new to having your own authority, there's going to be stacks of paperwork everywhere you look when you first get started. I would recommend staying away from hazmat at first until you really get a handle on all your paperwork, because there's a lot of scrutiny by the DOT to start with, and you really want to have a handle on everything before you tackle on the high-risk stuff like hazmat. That's just my recommendation on that.
No, I appreciate that. That's a good, yeah. I'll stay away from that. The only thing is, like, we were in Houston, and Roadrunner has their own agents that tell us what's available for truckload. So they're basically saying, look, if you don't have hazmat, we'll get you $1.60. With hazmat, we'll give you $2.10, which is what we took. But I think if we had our authority, I could get the $2.10 without it, it sounds like, from some of the rates I'm seeing.
Probably better than that right now, the way the spot market is.
Yeah.
You'll be better off. But the hazmat, it will pay a premium, but those loads are few and far between. Unless you're, you know, you have a customer that you know you're going to haul that, you know, weekly or on a daily basis, it's usually not worth the extra cost. You may not even be able to get insurance, depending on your background and record and being a new entrant to begin with. Insurance premium for new entrants is already through the roof. It might not even be a possibility for you right off the bat. That's going to depend on your insurance agent, but it's probably not the best way to go.
Could you give me a ball? Like, we pay $400. We have a brand new truck, so that's $400 a month just for its protection. But in terms of cargo insurance, to add, I was trying to figure out what extra am I going to be paying with authority versus just being an IC for Roadrunner.
What state are you in?
North Carolina.
North Carolina, I don't believe, is horrible, but just first year, assuming you have a great driving record and nothing comes up in your history or anything like that, with just your minimums for cargo insurance of $100,000, and then most brokers are going to want you to have $1 million in liability, you're looking at probably right around $10,000 your first year. And they're going to want usually around 30% down.
Okay, so does it go down year two then? Are you saying, or is that what are you saying there?
It will go down over time as insurance rates. There's a lot going on in the insurance market right now across the board.
Yeah,
health insurance,
and that's
going to
also
everything.
Yeah. I was about to say that's going to depend on your DOT record as well. Your DOT record and all that is starting to affect the insurance rates.
Your CSA score, even warnings, if you have a light burned out and an officer just writes you a warning ticket, that goes against it, and that goes against your CSA score, and your insurance company sees that. So if you have perfect, clean everything, it will go down over time. My agent says now they're looking at 3 to 4 years before you really see a good premium reduction, if you can keep it clean that long. It's really difficult to do. As anybody can tell you, even the slightest little thing is a ding on your record now. But it will go down over time. And getting your initial safety audit out of the way helps a lot, and it will go down. But, again, if you want to keep adding more insurance, you know, some brokers want $250,000 in cargo. Some, you know, if you want to add hazmat later on, I mean, it's all a variable. So you talk to your NASDAQ insurance rep, and they will be able to set you up, give you the best deal, and give you all your options.
Well, I did talk to them, and they said they weren't sure what level I should buy exactly. They mentioned that the entry level is about $100,000 on the cargo, but they do say they did. You know, they said there are, like, you can get $100,000 or like $250,000. Would anybody got? Is there any insight on what I should start out with? You know, am I going to be generally okay with $100,000 with most brokers?
Okay, most
$100,000 is.
$100,000 is the minimum. Is the minimum by FMCSA rules, and then for physical, they want $750,000. But most brokers will want $1 million for physical liability. That's if you wreck your truck and hurt somebody, something like that.
Right.
You're covered up to
okay.
$1 million. Okay. So most brokers will want that. The federal minimum on that is $750,000, and then cargo, the minimum is $100,000. Depending on your
brokers
staying on the load customer, they might want more. But you can add, some of that stuff can be added on a per load basis if you needed more. I'd say 90% of your freight you can move with $100,000 of cargo insurance, and then you can always amend that for more on a per load basis if you need to.
Excellent tips. Yeah, so it sounds like, yeah, I'm definitely not the person that wants all that paperwork, you know, for that, for kind of like Rico said, I'd rather focus on the rates and some, you know, enjoy my time at home and not waste too much, because it's only a more or less a one-time fee that I'd rather not wrap myself into all that stuff. So that's good information. Appreciate it.
No problem.
All right, Jim. Kenny, you have something else you want to throw in there?
I did have something for you, Rico. You started off the show talking about the trend lines and historical data, and I know you keep your records and you've got this pretty well squared away, so you're the guy to ask. Historically, July, you know, the holidays behind us now, we're into the full-blown summertime. July and August are typically this kind of a steady but slower time of year. Of course, this
right.
year is nothing but typical. So what are your predictions for the next couple of months through the summer?
Well, if the previous from the beginning of this year, 2014 has been the exception and not the rule. Things are seem to be really turning around for the most part, even though, you know, I know the stock market, I didn't look at it today. I know yesterday it took a little bit of a beating. But things have really turned around this year as far as the economy is concerned, and it's really showing, and the trucking, you know, is one of the first indicators of what's coming down the pipe. So it's one of those things where I'm not really comfortable with maybe throwing out a prediction, because right now it's like uncharted territory. It's everything has kind of been off the charts as far as, you know, with rates and capacity and everything. It seems like more people are shipping. I don't know exactly, you know, from listening to all the different stories with them, the expanding of the Panama Canal and with more freight coming up through, I've heard different stories about them building more roads down in Mexico, so that now they're trying to bypass a lot of stuff coming up through California, so it's going to be coming up through the Rio Grande and through Texas on that side. And so I'm seeing more capacity coming out that way. So it's really difficult to try and, you know, rub the crystal ball and put my Nostradamus hat on and give a prediction on stuff like that, because it's really uncharted territory right now.
But all the indicators seem to be pointing in the direction that it's probably going to be better than the past. Is that kind of where it's going?
Yes.
On?
Yes.
That's good news for everybody.
Everything. Exactly. Everything that I'm seeing right now, everything, all arrows are pointing up. So it's really a great time if you're getting your own authority. I mean, you're getting in at a great time. Capacity is still at an all-time high across all segments. And even with, like you say, we're starting to go into a little bit of a low period, but even right now, I mean, we were talking about it earlier in the hot state, and it's still, I mean, freight is, you know, normally after July 4th is normally when everything kind of falls dead on its face, and it's still kind of hot out here. It's still kind of, capacity is still at a really high level.
Right, that's kind of what I was seeing, especially in the Georgia and North Carolina where Chad's at. Some of that stuff, I was surprised at the rates even after the 4th. So even over the 4th, I know some people were posting on the rate per mile page that they had trouble finding freight on that, you know, Thursday leading into the holiday, but it seemed like everybody, well, for the most part, there was still a lot of stuff going on. So I was pleasantly surprised.
Right, right. We got one I'm going to bring on. You going to hang on with us, Kenny?
Sure, I'll stick around.
All right, I got two calls I want to bring on. I'm going to bring on James first, and then I'm going to go to my good friend George, which I'm kind of scared to go to George, but I think he might have been pumping some sunshine upstairs, but... Let's see. Let's go to James here first. James.
How's it going, Rick?
I'm well. And hold on one second, James. I'm going to go ahead and get my good friend George up here. George, you on here?
Yeah, good evening. How are you guys?
All right. Well, we got kind of a little party line going on. I want to get James. James has a question for us. I want James to go ahead and put his question out there, and we'll all maybe take a crack at it.
All right, next year I'm thinking about getting my own authority, and I was wondering about factoring companies going through them. How do we get started? Is it a good idea, or is it too expensive?
No.
Don't do it.
Well, James, we'll all take a crack at it. I'm gonna put the politically. Well, I ain't gonna say politically correct, but I'm gonna tell you like this, James. Factoring is it's kind of frowned upon, but if you need to do it, if you have to do it, use it as a last-ditch resort effort. Because I'm not going to sit here and just say that, you know, flat out, no, don't do it. Because sometimes, sometimes it may be, there are some occurrences where it may be beneficial. It may help you out in a situation. But understand before you get in bed with any factoring company, understand what it is that you're signing up for. Make sure that you understand the rates. All factoring companies are not created equal. There are some better ones out there that you can deal with that have decent rates. There are some that are, you know, understanding the difference between recourse, non-recourse, understanding the difference between the different APR rates. But if at all possible, James, I would recommend that if you could get a relationship established with your bank, if you got halfway decent credit or whatever, maybe get a relationship established with your bank to see if you can't get a working line of credit available to you so that way you don't have to deal with the scourge of factoring. And with that said, I'm gonna release the hounds on you, James.
Hey, James, it's George. I've had next month will be 2 years since my authority was granted, a year and a half since I've been in business. If you or the other gentleman with his step deck, the gentleman there from South Carolina, I think is going to do a great job. Once you get your authority, you are going to get bombarded with so much stuff. Even now today, I got another phone call, but this guy was not too much of a hound. But the factoring will, jump all over you because it is a moneymaker for them. But if you play your cards right, and I focus so much on direct shippers, 99% of mine are direct shippers. I have an agreement up front, and I can say 90 to 95% pay in 15 days. I have some paying in 4 and 5 days, which are dynamite. But you will get bombarded. But if it's something you need to build or you're in a tight bind, you can do it, but you can put your fuel on a credit card too, and it's going to be less than factoring. I mean, fuel is going to be your biggest expense.
Yeah, when I was thinking about going through like direct shippers, I was thinking I was going to have to wait like 30 to 60 days, 90 days, like that.
No, you don't want to give them that. If you got direct shippers, you do not want to give them that big of a lease. You're not big enough to absorb that big of a time frame. And if you factored someone for 60 or 90 days, most factors are going to give you like a 30-day window before they want to see their money returned. And after that 30-day window, their rates will start to increase exponentially. And you will start to, even the good factors may give you like a 2% or a 3% on the factoring rates, but after 30 days, those things jump 5, 10, 15, 20%. And you're going to be paying through the nose if you give that much time. And a direct shipper is generally the big boys are the ones that are going to try to push you over as far as making you wait. I think Walmart are one of the ones that will tell you that, they're with Walmart, we're going to be here forever, but they want 90 days before they'll pay. As a small trucking company, you just don't have that kind of, you're essentially giving them a loan. You're issuing them a line of credit for your services until they pay you. And I don't believe that you should give no one that long to, starting out, unless you just got really, 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 really deep pockets.
Okay.
Hey, James.
Go
ahead. James, do you have opportunities with direct shippers?
I have about 6 to 10 furniture manufacturers within 30 miles of me that I can do.
And you have some relationships with them? Can you get in the door? Do you know people?
One for sure I do. I know I'll be able to get a load every week up. So I got that set up already. I ain't worried about getting paid with them. It's just when I'm trying to find stuff coming back home that I'm worried about.
Well, I mean, the NMFC, which is the National Motor Freight Classification, and this is what I learned so much in the LTL world. Yes, I know, you know, very much people get stretched out 30, 45, 60 days. I wish I had it to bring it right up, but in the National Motor Freight Classification, the NMFC guide, it is in there, payment terms are 15 days for freight.
Okay.
Now, you let something go beyond that, you know, you negotiate that, well, that's okay. I mean, that's your choice. But if you're bringing direct service to them, they're going to see the value. Don't be afraid, you know, don't push the envelope and be, I'm going to say cocky about it, but, you know, don't be afraid to say to them, listen, you know, 25 to 45% of what I just charge you is my fuel.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't go to your credit card company or NASDAQ or whoever you get your fuel through and say, hey, can you hold off? I haven't gotten paid yet. That's not going to fly.
Yeah.
And you know, if you have direct shippers, they're really not going to have a problem, especially if you're going above and beyond and bringing them something that is better than anything that they're used to and, you know, unfortunately what I call the broker world. You know, I think you shouldn't have any problem. And when you go in and talk to them and say, listen, my payment terms are 15 days. Can you work with that?
Yeah. Just go ahead and set that up before I even.
Yeah, that's part of your negotiation.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. So if I need to go to a bank and I want to go ahead, before I get started, I want to go ahead and get that line of, just have that credit for backup. How do I approach them with it?
Well, this is what you want to do, especially when you go into when you go into your bank. What you want to do is basically you want to put your best foot forward, and you want to go in, create a portfolio. When you're going into your bank, go ahead and have your last 2 to 3 years of tax returns. Go ahead and have that stuff. Have your resume printed out, what it is that you do, how you do it, if you got any kind of classifications or if you took any kind of classes, anything like that. Get all that stuff printed up, put it in a nice little binder and everything, so when you're going in, he ain't even got to pull none of that stuff. You may even want to go ahead and pull your credit report or whatever and put it in there with it. But if you go in there and you go in there, you know, got your nice shirt pressed or whatever, go in there with a suit and tie on, and you go in there and you're talking to him, and you hand them your portfolio, you know, this is for you, and, you know, tell them what you're in there for. That, so far, you know, the impression that banker is going to get right off the gate is that, you know, you're already coming in, that you're prepared, you're ready for business. It kind of already sets up the precedence, and it looks at you in a different light. Now, of course, you're still going to have to, you know, at the end of the day, the underwriters and everything are still going to rule the day. As far as your credit worthiness or whatever, but if you go in there and showing that, you know, you got some type of relationship with this bank already, if you've already been dealing with them, then your success is more than likely going to increase. Now, I recommend dealing, I don't know who you bank with, but I'm a strong proponent of dealing with local companies, dealing with local banks, dealing, you know, so if you got a local bank versus a big national chain, you know, sometimes those relationships and the criteria is a little bit less stringent than having to go through a Wells Fargo or a Bank of America or something like that. So, you know, and even better if you got a credit union, because they understand that small businesses is, you know, that's the majority of their customers are small businesses. And they understand that, so the relationship and everything is looked at totally different. But as long as you go in there with all of your documentation already prepared, you should have a general idea of what you're already going to have to have as far as qualifications for a different loan or whatever. So if you go ahead and have all that stuff, even though they may pull it anyway, but if you go in there with it and here it is, here's my information, you got it in a nice little binder or whatever, you know, go spend a little time, take it down to Kinko's or somewhere and get that stuff pressed up. I mean, that first impression that it's going to make on them is like, wow, you know, go ahead and have you some business cards and everything made up. It lets them know that you're prepared, that you're ready, that you're serious about business.
But it separates
you from a lot of the clients that may be coming in coming in and applying for loans that really don't have a clue. You know, it kind of gets you from first base already, puts you directly on second base. Go ahead, George. I'm going to shut up and let you get in.
Go in as a business owner that has a vested interest and you have a ton on the line. Don't go in. I don't know how many people are on the call listening, and please don't be upset by this, but don't go in as a trucker.
Yeah.
Go in as a business owner. That's what you are.
Man. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've got my credit union who I do a bunch with, and the one branch manager, Kelly, has become very good friends of mine through refinancing the house. One thing we did for pulling out equity is, or for capital for the business, was pulling equity out of the house.
Yeah.
You know, that's a spot that you can pull from. Don't get too used to it because it goes away real quick. You buy a trailer or two. But, you know, they have now come to me saying, you know, handing me the card just a few weeks ago, a month ago, saying, hey, here's our commercial person. I think you need to talk to Carolyn. And, I just need to do that. I mean, they see what you do. They see your excitement. They see your enthusiasm, and especially if you bring the professionalism. You know, run with it.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Kenny, Chad, y'all want to add anything?
Yeah, I've got another thing to add. This is Kenny. Make sure you join that Motor Carrier Meetup page as well. We were talking about this a couple of weeks ago about factoring, and the factoring companies, like George said, are going to just bombard you with flyers and phone calls and emails and everything you can think of telling you how great it is to join them, and if you don't, the sky is going to fall. And I'll tell you, it gets really old really quick. And some of them look like they're pretty enticing deals, but you really have to read between the lines on it. And a lot of the things that they're going to throw at you are that they'll do credit checks for you. They'll throw at all the percentages, or they'll give you a fuel card, or they'll give you all these different things that they can offer. And anything that they can offer, you can do on your own. You can get a fuel card through NASDAQ. You hear Rico talk about NASDAQ all the time. Their fuel card is excellent, better than any of the factoring companies can offer you. A couple of weeks ago, we did a conference call, and I posted a lot of links on how you can check credit yourself. You can go through Experian or Dun and Bradstreet, pull credit reports yourself. And in the long run, even though you might have to pay for some of these services, the money that you shell out to a factoring company is exponentially more than what you might have to pay for a credit check here and there, or a monthly, you know, fee for a fuel card through NASDAQ or something like that. So you really have to know your numbers, and you really have to pay attention to your business, and don't let these other companies take advantage of you.
All right. All right. So, James, I hope that helps you. Do you got any other questions, anything you want to ask?
I got one more question. Before I get my authority, it usually takes 3 weeks to get to the authority, right? Or did it all clear?
It doesn't really take that long. It doesn't necessarily take that long. Basically, it's actually a lot quicker than that.
Okay.
Just depends on how quickly you get your insurance and everything in place as far as getting it active.
Okay. So, can I buy a truck before I actually get, can I get my authority before I buy a truck? And just get it active after I got the truck and got the insurance?
Don't think you're going to be able to do that, because you're going to have the insurance in order for your authority to become active. I think you can apply for it. Kenny, we're going to build that one on you. What do you say?
Sure, I got it. Okay. Depending on who you go through to get your authority set up, NASDAQ, or if you do it by yourself, they all go through the same system. They go to SMCSA, they fill out an application. It's $300. You will immediately get your numbers from FMCSA. You'll get your DOT number. I think it takes a day or two for them to process the paperwork, and they'll give you a docket number. The docket number is your MC number. At that point, they process the paperwork. It might take a week or so, and you'll get an email saying that your authority is, your paperwork packet, however they phrase it, has been accepted. At that point, all they're waiting for is your insurance. And so you need insurance, liability insurance, and in order to do that, you obviously have to have a truck. So that application will stay open for years until you get a truck and put insurance on it. You don't have to rush and get a truck first. Although the whole process, you know, by the time you go and find a truck and buy a truck and get the truck set up and everything, your application should be good to go. And once you get your insurance on it, it should flow pretty smooth. So
That's what I was wondering. I didn't want to be losing money while I'm sitting there waiting on it to come through, and I got this truck payment coming up. And I wanted to have it all taken care of.
You might want to wait maybe a week or two before you sign the paperwork on a new truck before you have a payment.
Yeah.
But you don't. You could do it now. You could do it in a week or two. It's no rush. You can put the paperwork in now, and it's just the only thing that will hold you up before it goes active is your insurance. And once your insurance company files the 91, can't think of the form that they send up now, but once your insurance company basically sends it confirmation that you're covered, you'll have your authority active almost immediately.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Ricky, I appreciate what you're doing, man. It makes a new guy like me realize he can go ahead and do this. So I appreciate what y'all doing.
No problem. We appreciate
your
support.
One thing I want to mention here, with regards to insurance, Kenny was talking about it earlier. $100,000. Is the cargo liability minimum. If you need more, once you have your relationship established with your agent, you can get a rider if you want $500,000, $1 million. Just find out the price if that's what your customer wants. Just give them a number. But the one thing I wanted to mention, on your MCS 150, because this happened to me when I had my audit, if you're running, I mean, whether I run my Kentucky enclosed trailer or my step deck, I put on there that I may be moving vehicles which contained fuel oils for their own consumption. But in that situation, if you're going to move something like that that could have hazardous in it, so it's not a hazardous cargo, you need $1 million of physical, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Physical damage, yes. $750 is the minimum, but if you have if you're going to move cars, vehicles, tractors, equipment that have oil in them, you need $1 million, because that was a holdup for me on my audit, my FMCSA audit. But while I say that, this is where I want to put a huge plug in for Rex Evilsizer. During that audit, I picked up the phone, I called Rex, got him on the phone. He said, nope, you don't need it. This is how you do it. This is, you know, yes, this is a problem. He was right there. And I don't want to discount NASDAQ. I don't have a relationship with them. I'm working on that to get to that point, but boy, I don't want to discount Rex. He is a dynamite person for anybody getting their own authority. Boom, done. I was under $500, finished out the door, and is still a resource to this day.
Yeah, Rex was sharp. I went through Rex as well. That was a guy that I set mine up as well. But Rex was definitely a sharp.
And been doing it over 30 years?
Yeah, he was doing it back when, because he helped me get the dual authority. I have both contract and common carrier authority for the same price.
Okay.
So that was, and I didn't know that you could, that was something I didn't know that you could even do.
Well, I just wonder what I missed out on.
Oh, he didn't offer you that one?
I don't know. It was a bouncing ball. I went to the CMC in 2012, picked up my truck in Colorado on a transit tag, bobtailing home to New York. I don't know. So much happened in about 3 months. I don't know what happened then.
So what have you been doing? What have you been up to this week, George?
Nah, just trying to get some air conditioning fixed in the truck, which, I know it's not rates and lanes, but one thing I want to, say to people, work to build your relationships with your shops. I mean, there's plenty of people on CMC and, the MPG Masters, Ray Promot, talk about relationships. Don't forget about your vendors. This one shop that I'm dealing with, they have a place in Rochester and Buffalo. I deal with Rochester. They're 5 miles up the road. Third time they've been tackling the AC. And, lately, he goes, listen, I'm not charging you for the labor. I haven't fixed it. But they've just been great to deal with. They appreciate me. They appreciate that I'm patient about things. They know things happen. And, Rico, I think I'm big on my image because I want to work to build the company. So we have the logo. We have apparel, T-shirts, sweatshirts that you know, if some customers get to a certain level, I give them one. That comes from my sales side. You know, I took 4 T-shirts down to these guys, two guys in the shop, the foreman and the owner. You know, I walked out like a freaking rock star, and it was $40 worth of shirts.
Right.
You know, they were like, wow, and, you know, all I need is one of them to walk around saying, hey, what is that? You know, oh, that's
right,
that's
exactly.
The guy moves a lot of cool stuff. You know, you don't know who it's going to be in front of, but, you know, but to answer your question, I haven't done anything this week.
Well, I hope you get that air conditioning straightened out, because you definitely, I don't know, you're up in New York, you're one of those Yankees, you guys might not need it too much up that way. Us Southern boys,
you and Chad, you know, you guys south of the Mason-Dixon line aren't allowed up here. You know, Kenny, yeah, I don't know, Kenny needs to come up here because of, you know, Elizabeth.
I don't know, George. I might dip my toe in and start running up to New York. I've been getting some inquiries on some nice rates coming up that way.
Well, I don't know. I think you're going to come up here and want to, you know, unleash a little whoop ass on me, because now that I realize your daughter was not screening calls, it was your wife. Now I turned a whole other thing on with her. You're about to go broke. I answered that you were going to take her out to dinner, and she goes, "No, I'll just take the money." So what's up with that?
Hey, she just told you the truth then, my friend. I'm not even going to deny, not going to come back that or anything. She told you the truth.
Now, get yourself up here, and, you know, we'll hang out. We'll go out to dinner.
Sure thing. Well, guys, I appreciate it. Anything, any closing remarks? Got one more question. I see somebody pop back in. One more question. Let me hold on. Let's see. Go back to Jim. Jim,
hey,
one
Rico,
more question.
Yes. Okay, I appreciate that. I was just going to ask you, as a roadrunner, you know, we can haul freight and they take 12% if we get our own or if we use their truckload agents, 8%. I see you had an offer to join that DAT. Am I allowed to use Roadrunner's DOT number the way I would through, you know, like right now I'm hauling non-Roadrunner, I'm just hauling general freight, really, off of someone, you know, off the load boards with their number. To practice, is it okay if I do my month with their number, being that I'm allowed to haul freight under it? It's just that they're going to take 12% right now until I get my authority. Is that all right?
You may have to call DAT on that one. I don't think so, though. I think that they're gonna want you to have your own account. Roadrunner may give you their blessing to set up the low board. Chad, you want to add something on that?
Yeah, well, we had someone that just did this with Roadrunner, and I know some. I'm getting the two people mixed up. I talked to so many different people, but we have another person that was with Roadrunner, and I'm thinking that she was able to, that Roadrunner let her do it, or DAT. It was either them or another company, but I do know that there was one company that let someone use their. They were leased onto the company, and they got access through the company to be able to use that. And we have someone that's doing the same thing that's with Roadrunner right now. Her name's Kathy. And so look her up on the Rate for My Masters. Her name's Kathy, and she'll be able to answer that question for sure.
Okay, yeah, because I was able to get a subscription to Internet Truck Stop. I joined that for a few months just to watch the race, and they were okay with that. So if I do that, say, Chad, if I do that, would you mind doing it? You know, I don't mind paying you even just to help me find a load or two. Because I think I'll do better getting my own loads at 12% until I get my authority. I think I'll do better getting my own at 12% deduction than having the truckload brokers at Roadrunner find them for me, where they just, you know, where they only take 8%, but then they're keeping something also, so it's not getting it's less.
That's what me and the lady named Kathy. That's what me and her. She's with Roadrunner as well, and. It's like, I guess, when you're with Roadrunner, you can find your own brokered loads, and I sort of did that with her. I didn't charge her. There was no charge with that. She wants me to hear after, I guess, the 1st of August, we're talking about training her nephew, and her nephew is going to be looking for those loads for her to book through Roadrunner. She doesn't want to leave Roadrunner, but she wants to have more of the capability of getting her own loads. She likes the driving part. She doesn't want to do all the looking the loads and driving at the same and doing all that at the same time. But that's another person that's, I'll help you out. No problem at all. get you through your first load or your second load if you need it. No problem.
Well, that way I can kind of practice while I'm getting my authority over the next 6 weeks or so. I'll already, when I jump in with it, then I'll even just be that much better off. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I got a tight schedule for the next 2 weeks, and I'm starting to get a pretty good size list of people that need that's asking for that same assistance. But here in about 2 weeks, I'll be down for quite a while, and during that time, will be a good time to hit me up on that.
Okay, I'll wait 2 weeks. I appreciate it.
Send me a private message with your phone number, and I'll try to get back to you. Well, I'll definitely get back to you. Send me your number.
Yeah, and I'll look her up too. I appreciate that tip. Thank you, Bob.
Another thing you can do. It sounds like we're getting ready to do our closing comments. Another thing you can do. Last night we it was like way up in the middle of the night, like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. A person he had his own authority. We were doing mock negotiation, like on the conference line on the Rate for Mile Masters conference line that I set up. It's you can call it 24/7, and if someone's already on there, you can start joining a conversation there. Most of the time, it starts getting busy real late at night, like after the after this podcast. When this ends, it'll probably start up there. And we had a TQL broker on there last night as well. he joined in. I can see who's on there, but he was blocking his number to where I couldn't see who the number was. And we got to talking about that load that I started off with about the load that got canceled on us that happened to Olivia, the load that I found for her, and they up and canceled it before they get sent us the rate sheet. And we were talking about that and how angry that made me. And then another person voiced their opinion about how something similar to that happened with TQL. And, it's going to happen with brokers. TQL is big and they're more visible. And but the TQL guy, the TQL broker, he came out and it turned into a really, really good conversation. I mean, everybody had a lot of questions for him. This was a well-educated TQL broker, and TQL has had a black eye in the past, and since it's a good time to say, he was voicing his opinion of what's going on at TQL as the past 2 months that so that they can get rid of this black eye that they've had in the past with, because they're so big and when things go wrong, it gets magnified. That anytime you have a problem with one of their agents, that you can report it, and when you report any of those actions, they're stepping in and doing something about it. And another thing that he brought up that was really good, and I liked this a lot, and I didn't know it until he told me, that is with TQL now that they've had a big problem with the carriers getting mad about having trouble getting paid for detention. Well, something recently that they've started is that you can call TQL, talk to someone there at TQL to put into your profile that your set rate for detention is this rate, and whenever, like if I said, if I call TQL, and I plan on doing this, call TQL up and say, hey, my detention rate is $75 an hour. After the first 2 hours, that is your set standard rate. And every time TQL calls you, whenever they call you and before they book you the load, they see that this is what you're demanding, what your requirement is for detention. If it were to go in detention on the pickup or the delivery side, I didn't know this, and he came in there and he educated us that's going on. And it was a really good conversation. He was on there for a while, but it took us it took someone talking a little bit bad, talking about the incident they had with TQL in the past to get him to come out and start talking. Then from there on, we were pounding away with the questions, and it was all really good stuff. I mean, no bashing. It was him giving his feedback and telling him about how brokers profile carriers and a little bit of that, and good stuff. I liked it a lot. But anyway. That conference line starts getting started around after the podcast, and Kenny does a podcast as well, a conference call-in line on the motor for those that are in the motor carrier meetup group, and so then it starts getting a little active. That's when people start going into the conference then, and after Kevin's show, his live shows, and that usually, so anytime those shows end, that's when the all-night conference line starts getting going. And anyway, last night, what made it really good is the mock negotiating, like me and Rico was talking about wanting to do on this podcast. We were sort of we had a guy that was like, Chad, how do you go through this type of scenario when the broker does this? And they got me like, so me and Olivia, I think Elizabeth was there, Kenny's wife was on the line, and we were rehearsing how I would play out if pretend like if that person was the broker and they started questioning me, how I would react to it. And he got a lot out of that. But I'm taking up too much of your time, so go ahead, Rico.
Hey, you on a roll there, buddy. So Jim, does that help you out? Did it get you squared away there?
Yes, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's a great show you have here, Rico, and it's I'm very more educated by every time I listen and get to talk and listen. It's just I'm very happy. Thank you.
Well, I want to take my hand off to all my friends that come along to help me out. That help me out as well.
Rico, can I post a question? I want to ask a question here. You know, you guys do so much on the broker side. Here's my situation. You know, I mean, Chad and I have talked about it. Kenny and Elizabeth, you know, Joe and I have talked about it. You and I have talked about it. I do a lot of empty miles, although I'm compensated for them. Here's my situation. I'm doing a trip with a friend of mine, leave Sunday night for Phoenix from Western New York. He's a household goods mover. But we're delivering, two, maybe three families out there, done, finished. Our plan, or his plan, is deadhead home. Biggest issue is need to be home Friday because he has obligations over the weekend. That's why I do a team trip with him. He helps me. I help him. What are some of my better avenues to find something? I don't want, it's a moving van. It's 48 feet. I'm looking for the unique side of things. I mean, is there a good load board to target something that is going to be no screwing around? I don't want to get somewhere and say, well, it'll be 4 hours till we load. Not a problem. You're not going to do it.
Well, you can do corridor searches. You say it's a 48-footer?
Yes.
Yeah. You can do some corridor searches back and forth, going back to when are you guys going to get empty?
Wednesday. I mean, I've already got two customers. I'm working on two moves. One is it's a 6,000-pound lathe from western Nebraska, so we might deviate up to come back. But, you know, that's one of my direct shippers. He doesn't want to pay the money, but, I told him, I said, if you ship a common carrier LTL, it's going to get destroyed. He goes, yeah, I'm concerned about that. Then,
right.
then quit messing around. Right? Let's just move it. Chad and I have talked in the past, and, I posted. I mean, whether it be my Kentucky or Steve's trailer in this situation, I mean, we're talking more of a logistics, full-blown, moving van that can do unique stuff. I don't want, loads of, metal castings and pasta sauce.
I'm drawing a blank on that one, Kenny, as far as stuff like that, unless you're looking on like your U-ships and stuff like that. And I've looked on U-ship before. I'm not sure exactly. I've heard some people say they've got some decent stuff off of U-ship. I've gotten some
good stuff, and then I've gotten them to get to me directly. That's what we're searching. I posted on Robinson's website. I posted, the trailer being available, despite it's not my truck and trailer. We just work it on my authority. But it's kind of like a unique thing.
Yeah.
And Chad, what are your thoughts?
Well, George, I've seen your van, your trailer before. Did that have a lift gate on the back?
Yeah, but this trip we're not using the liftgate.
Right.
We're using his trailer. I mean, my trailer has dock leveler liftgate. His is just a 48-foot, but I mean, we can get it to dock height, throw a few blocks down. It's not rocket science.
The type of loads that you're looking for, they pop up on the load board, and they're usually the loads that stay on the load board for a really long time because not a whole lot of people like my operation, if it says it needs 20 blankets and 12 straps, I'll put a price on it, but my price is going to be so ridiculous that they're not going to mess with me because I'm not used to that. That's not something that I mean, I got a trailer that I can use logistics post. I'll put, you know, two or three, but, you know, you asking for 15, good Lord, what are we doing here? You know, I'm not accustomed to that type of operation. This is the type of work you do, and you can price it more realistic than someone that just looks at that like, it's going to take a lot of time. But anyway, you're talking, and it's funny that you mentioned this, that the other day I brought you up to a Pakistani guy. I was picking up a load for a broker.
Thank you.
And I brought you up. He was down in New York City. He had a load. I thought it was going to be something similar to what we were doing there in Lexington, and but it actually his load in New York City, near New York City, is the way he explained it, was going to be a power only. It was already going to be on a trailer, but I thought it was going to be very similar to the load we were doing in Lexington. And the load we were doing in Lexington, these people were not used to dealing with a truck and a trailer of my, you know, big 53-foot trailer and a truck coming up into their parking lot. And they were loading rugs. These are like Pakistani, they call it magic carpets, not rugs. So they would be carpet rugs, I guess. Yeah, magic carpet. And I could tell the Pakistani guy got a bunch of people from Craigslist that didn't really know what they were doing when it comes to loading a truck or stacking a pallet and that sort of stuff. And so I'm there in Lexington. I couldn't help, I've been sitting there for a long time. And I'm watching these guys, and I could tell that they didn't know what they're doing. So I joined in and gave them some straps. I'm like, here, you know, this will help keep it in place. I carry like maybe six or seven straps in my truck, and then I showed them how to shrink wrap it. And this Pakistani guy saw me helping his people that he hired, and assisting the guy that was in charge of these people. And I guess he liked it. He handed me his business card, and he started talking to me about the load that he had up in New York, and all the stuff that was coming out of. Out of Atlanta, he's got a warehouse down there where a lot of these where these rugs come out of, I guess, and they're expensive. Like one rug, when we first went there, I brought my wife there, and my wife's like looking at the rugs, and the guy says, we give you big discount. You know, you haul our loads, we give you big discount. And I said, honey, he's probably going to give you a big discount. Are you sure you don't want one? And she's like, and she shows me the price tag of one of these rugs that you'd put in your living room. And it was like $6,000. I'm like, no way. I don't want no rug that costs that much. But so this is really expensive. And I'm giving him briefs on how to get the right person in here to move his loads and stuff. And I said, you also got to watch that a lot of these carriers only have $100,000 in cargo, and you got a lot of rugs in here. And I'm like, is $100,000 going to cover that? He said, this load that you're putting in here, would $100,000 be able to cover that? He's like, it doesn't come close. I don't know what the value of the load was, but I went ahead and delivered it for him. But here I am giving him advice, and he tells me this. And he does a lot of artwork. So that's what I know, George, there, you've done artwork in the past. I don't think his artwork isn't really, really extremely expensive, but it's, each painting's probably $100. But if you fill up a big 53-foot van, I'm sure that's worth a lot of money. But I don't even know where I was going with that story. Anyway, I brought you up in that subject, and I got his contact info. He wanted to use me, and I said, well, I got this load from a broker. You know, I've got this load from a broker. I can't do wrong to the person that gives me that's paying me on this load. I'm like, but since you like my service, you know, if you got some friends, Pakistanis, they when they find someone they like, they share that information. I'm like, but if you have someone you like, you know, that's here in the Lexington area, I can do your loads like that, and I also have contacts other places that could also help you as well. That's how I brought you up, George.
Oh, good. Thank you.
But anyway,
got a warehouse in Atlanta and ships to New York. I'm coming your way, George. I got the contact. Changes open up the gate.
Our door is open, and Kim and I will, you know, hang out. You know, I just hope you like drinking beer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if I had a liftgate for this guy, if I had the liftgate capability for this guy, I would have been golden. I mean, he would probably have me on everything he does. He would probably wait on his shipments before and wait until I got there, because he does these displays in like shopping malls and places like this, where he'll set up a display of all of his rugs and try to sell them, and then he'll close it up after 4 months and he'll move on to somewhere else. And they do this throughout America, I guess, all over the place. But his biggest problem is getting the stuff off the trucks and back on the trucks, because when he put it on my truck, he had to rent a forklift and then he had to turn around and rent a tow truck that would go and pick up the forklift to bring it to his place to put it on there. And I think the forklift, the rental of the forklift and the tow truck cost him $600, and it was right there in town.
Have you thought about putting a liftgate on your trailer?
Not until I've seen him spend $600 on something like that. I thought about that, absolutely.
Well, the reason I mention it is that, I mean, my Kentucky, the liftgate on there is made by MBB, Michael Bravo, Interlift, and it's a PAL Finger company. They went through, fixed my liftgate, had some circuit board problems. They now make a liftgate that bolts right up to the pins that your sliders are on. It's a slick system. I mean, installed, you're still $10,000-$12,000, but I'm telling you, it puts you in a different category.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
I mean, that's a brand new liftgate. And there was a gentleman right there. He had a tractor. It was a 0304 W900 sharp looking reefer unit with the PAL Finger interlift slide under lift gate. All this guy did was he pulled out of Bronx, New York, and delivered to Chinese restaurants out to Chicago, down to Alabama, all lift gates. And there's no doubt in my mind this guy made a killing. Had an electric pallet jack in the trailer, and then he went home empty.
There you go. Well, gentlemen, we get ready to land this puppy. We got about 2 minutes left. Next week, I'm going to be following up. I want you guys that are on the call and everything that are listening, especially on your downloads, get your pen and paper ready. I want you to have your pen and paper ready for next week. Have some questions lined up, because I'm going to be following up, and I'll send out a blast to confirm everything. But our guests, our monthly guest should be in the house next week, Mr. Chuck Snow from Traffix, who is the CEO of Traffix out of Canada. So if you have any questions about cross-border trucking or anything like that, any questions about brokering or how to grow your company or whatever, anything like that, Chuck is a great resource. He'll be on with us next week. And like I said, I want to confirm everything to make sure that we're all solid on that. And I've got to try to track down Henry Seaton, because I know he probably had a couple of things that were going on. We had a schedule conflict. But we're going to try to get the attorney back on with us, too. And we're going to try to have those monthly segments for the podcast. So we got about 90 seconds left. So, Chad, anything you want to say in wrapping up?
That was a good podcast. I have nothing.
All right. Kenny, you got anything you want to say wrapping up?
It was a great show tonight, Rico. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Kenny. Thanks for coming. George, anything you want to say wrapping up?
You know, as I say in the past, I spent 15 years in sales, 15-plus years. I'm still selling every day for my own company. Though I said to you I wasn't working this week, I was out making sales calls, seeing customers, closing up deals for August. But you know what, as I said to James, you know, you're going out, you're a business owner. Don't be a business owner. Don't be a trucker. God, I feel bad saying that, but you know where I'm going with this. Put a smile on your face. My God, this is a great industry. Where else can you have the fun that we have? And Rico and Chad and you know, thanks for everything you guys do. This has been a blast. It's a refreshing breath of fresh air.
Amen to that. Well, with that said, we got about 20 seconds left, so everybody, I want you and sending out a big thanks from Kevin Rutherford and the entire Let's Truck team. I want you to continue to stay safe, be profitable, master the journey, and we'll talk with you next week.
Good night, everybody.